Donald Trump becomes the first Republican presidential candidate to win Wisconsin in 32 years. Ron Johnson wins a second term in the U.S. Senate. Just two of the top stories in state politics from this past year that we will review during our first state capitol report of 2017. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. It is 8.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, January 2nd. Happy New Year to you. Our state government reporters, Sean Johnson and Laurel White, will recap a busy 2016, and we'll preview the year to come. And we would like to know what you think was the top story in state politics in 2016, and what you are hoping our state lawmakers and other state government officials do or won't do in 2017. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Very happy to have with us Sean Johnson, who is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol Bureau Chief. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
And Laurel White is also here, Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol Reporter. Good morning, Laurel.
Good morning.
It's good to have you both here on a holiday. Thank you for spending this observed New Year's Day with us this morning. Boy, what a year it has been. Donald Trump wins Wisconsin, which is the first time since 1984 that a Republican candidate broke down the so-called blue wall here in Wisconsin. Sean, how'd that happen?
How did that happen? That's the question that people, how many think pieces did we read about how Donald Trump won Wisconsin over the last month or so? I think, that, you know, I always like doing these shows, but where you look back at the year that was, and I was just telling you, I have a hard time remembering anything else beyond that November election because it was such a huge story that Donald Trump won here, and he won it in an unconventional way. I mean, if you look at the counties where he overperformed Mitt Romney compared to 2012, there are a lot, but they're relatively small, and he underperformed Mitt Romney in those traditional Republican strongholds in southeast Wisconsin, but it was a winning formula for him. He had more broad-based supports in a lot of these smaller counties, and that carried him over the top, where Hillary Clinton underperformed Barack Obama in some important places, notably Milwaukee County, or where she was way behind Barack Obama's pace in 2012, and that combination gave Donald Trump a narrow victory in Wisconsin's presidential race.
Yeah, and I mean, Donald Trump actually was beaten pretty badly in the primary, yet he prevailed, even though we were a part of this Never Trump movement, right?
Yeah, he did. I was just looking back at how badly he was beaten, and it was, you know, 48% of the Republican primary vote went to Ted Cruz, to 35% for Donald Trump. And then the way that the Republicans divvy up their their votes for a primary, it was beaten especially bad because Cruz won most of the congressional districts as well. So it turned out to be the first and last stop on this Never Trump Express that was supposed to take off. I mean, there were a lot of Republicans who were saying, we need to mount an organized push to stop Donald Trump. So far, you've had all these candidates in there and there's been no organization. And so Wisconsin's where we're going to do it. They have an organized party apparatus there. And, you know, the Republican Party here got behind Ted Cruz. They were successful here. It just didn't take on.
And on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton was beaten badly by Bernie Sanders in the primary. And yet she didn't visit after that primary. So are people thinking that that had anything to do with her loss, Laurel?
There was a lot of speculation about that after the election. It was very unusual that Hillary didn't stop in Wisconsin. I think she was the first Democratic presidential nominee in quite a long time that didn't do so. Of course, Bernie Sanders came to Wisconsin for Hillary. at least twice. I was in the Madison area for Hillary and had, you know, large rallies. And I think that was seen as a strategic move to get those Bernie supporters who were really enthusiastic about him to kind of move their support from Bernie to Hillary. So, you know, that's one strategy. We also had Joe Biden here very close to the election for Hillary. But in the end, there was speculation that not having the nominee herself really made a difference to Wisconsin voters.
And then I know, Laurel, you covered the recount extensively. Then how? Why in the world did Wisconsin recount the presidential ballots?
Well, the recount was spurred by the Green Party candidate, Jill Stein. And she said from the very beginning that she didn't expect any change in the outcome of the election from the recount. What she wanted to do was to combat some of these speculations about computer problems, hacking, tampering with voting machines that had run sort of rampant after the election and had been kind of talked about a little bit before the election as well, mostly by Donald Trump. So really the Wisconsin presidential recount was focused on dispelling any of those thoughts and ensuring, in Jill Stein's words, the integrity of the elections process, making sure people had faith in that process. And in the end, we found out that really after a extensive recount, there were very few changes in the vote totals. Less than 2,000 votes changed ultimately.
We also had the dynamic going on in Wisconsin in that the House Speaker, Congressman Paul Ryan from the 1st Congressional District, had not been an early Trump supporter, and now we have Ryan, the House Speaker, having to work with President-elect Trump. How's that working out, Sean?
We'll find out soon. I mean, they have already kind of clashed over this issue of sanctions against Russia, for example. I mean, Speaker Ryan has been one of many Republicans who've been out there in a very prominent way saying we support these sanctions by President Obama, but they don't go far enough. Donald Trump has, you know, not taken that approach. You know, just recently praising Russian President Vladimir Putin for being a smart guy. So that's going to be one area where you're going to see whether or not they clash. Mostly you've heard both men say nice things about each other since the election, about how great it is going to be to work with each other. This is finally, like, for Paul Ryan, who has had this list of stuff he's wanted to accomplish for a long time, this is his best chance ever to get it done. I mean, he's Speaker of the House. He's in a position to move an agenda. He has a Republican Senate and a Republican President. So if they talk nice, play nice, say all the right things, they'll get some stuff accomplished. But remember, it was just a few months ago that Donald Trump was holding rallies here where people were chanting, Paul Ryan sucks. So it's not like everything is perfect now between them. I mean, there's that rift among Trump supporters especially. There are people who don't like Speaker Paul Ryan.
Yeah, it was interesting, too, the victory tour, the thank you tour that President-elect Trump took and stopped in West Allis, where he compared Speaker Ryan to fine wine.
It was to fine wine, right? And he said, you know, I forget the exact quote, but essentially, you know, you don't have anything
he's
to worry about
me.
With me unless he goes against me.
Yeah.
And then we'll see, which has been kind of the rule with President-elect Trump.
Yeah. So Trump wins Wisconsin. Ryan wins re-election. Has a little bit of a tension between him and the president-elect. We also had a U.S. Senator Ron Johnson was re-elected, whereas some months ago he was trailing a lot to Russ Feingold. Your analysis, Laurel, of what happened there?
Well, that was just a really unexpected twist. I guess, like the entirety of election night for a lot of people, Russ Feingold had been polling consistently ahead of the incumbent senator for months leading up to the election. It had tightened in the last couple months within the margin of error. So there was a little bit of speculation that, okay, this might flip. This might stay. We might keep Ron Johnson in office here in Wisconsin. I was actually covering the Russ Feingold event on election night, and the mood in the room was so jubilant when I arrived because his supporters really thought that Feingold was going to go back to the Senate where he'd served for 18 years. And then as the night went on and the results started coming in that surprised so many people, obviously the mood in the room changed. Feingold came up and gave a very brief 3-minute concession speech, said that he'd called the incumbent senator to congratulate him. So that was just a really surprising turn on election night, like so many others.
Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter, and Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol Bureau Chief, and they are our guests for this first State Capitol Report of 2017. We're reviewing the top stories in state politics, and we'll take a look to preview the year ahead as well. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is our State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine. It's the first State Capitol Report of 2017. We are using this opportunity to look back at the biggest stories in Wisconsin politics in 2016, and a little bit later we will look ahead to 2017. And we want to know, what do you think? What do you think was the biggest state government story in Wisconsin, or the biggest story in state politics? What are you watching in terms of state politics in 2017? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Talking with Sean Johnson and Laurel White, both cover state capitol news for Wisconsin Public Radio. We have already covered probably what is the top story of the year, Donald Trump becoming the first Republican presidential candidate to win Wisconsin since 1984. Ron Johnson wins a second term in the U.S. Senate. Let's talk a little bit about maybe a race that not a lot of people talk about, but I should talk about the 8th Congressional District. That was the only open seat of Wisconsin's congressional districts. Incumbents won all the other ones, but this was an open seat. And Mike Gallagher, the Republican candidate, took that seat. Sean, any thoughts on that race?
Only that Mike Gallagher is 32 years old and, you know, about to start a career in Congress here at 32. It could be potentially, you know, depending on how that district goes up there, potentially a long career if he wants it to be. I mean, this is somebody who has a real interest, obviously, in politics as a career. It's something he's worked as, as a staffer on Capitol Hill, as a consultant on Governor Scott Walker's short-lived presidential campaign. And now, you know, in a district where he had some more political veterans running, he emerged from a Republican primary and won the general election pretty handily. So we'll see what that brings of Mike Gallagher. The person he's replacing, Reed Ribble, had kind of a penchant for speaking his mind, occasionally working across the aisle on some issues. You know, we'll see if Gallagher continues that.
Mike Gallagher, by the way, has accepted an invitation to join us on Friday. So we'll talk with him Friday between 7 and 7:30 about issues facing Congress, and we'll hear more about what he has to say there. He was Governor Walker's foreign policy advisor on his presidential campaign, so that was interesting, too. So we also had a Supreme Court race. Laurel, I don't know if you covered that one very much, but we had a newly appointed incumbent running in that race against a previous candidate for state Supreme Court justice in maybe you can set the stage on that one.
That's right. So Rebecca Bradley was appointed by Governor Scott Walker, and she was running against Joanne Kloppenburg, who had previously run for the Supreme Court and was actually subject to that 2011 Supreme Court recount. So that was a close race. And Kloppenburg was defeated again this time. Bradley retained her seat after she was appointed to it. It was a really personal election cycle. There was a lot of focus on Rebecca Bradley's writings in college. She had written some op-eds for her school newspaper where she expressed some very strong opinions about gay people, calling them degenerates in newspaper columns. So there was quite a lot of focus on that, kind of her character. Her response to that was that she has evolved in her thinking about gay people, that she's very accepting of that now. So that was a tough race at times, getting kind of down and dirty.
Yeah, and there will be another race for state Supreme Court justice this spring, Sean?
Maybe a race in name only, though. I mean, right now we have one candidate on the ballot, and that is incumbent Justice Annette Ziegler. She's a member of the court's 5-2 conservative majority. So as of right now, nobody's stepping up to challenge Annette Ziegler, and the filing deadline's coming right up. I think it's tomorrow.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So, well, you know what? You just said that we have a 5-2 conservative majority Supreme Court. The election gave Republicans an even stronger majority in our state legislature, too. Isn't that right?
It did. They added a seat in the Assembly. They added a seat in the Senate in a year when, from a distance, it looked like, wow, you have this controversial guy who emerged from the Republican primary in Donald Trump. The general electorate's not going to like that. It could be a wave year for Democrats. And it was anything but. And in Wisconsin, especially in the Assembly, where Republicans already had 63 seats to 36 seats for Democrats, it looked like there was a chance there for Democrats to make some gains. And so for Republicans to, you know, inch the other direction and make that big majority historically big was, I don't think, predicted too widely.
And just because it's related, we had Governor Walker say, you know what, this is going to be cool because we've got this Republican majority in Wisconsin, but we also have strong Republican majorities in Congress now. And we have my friend Paul Ryan as Speaker of the House and a Republican president, and we can proceed, we can work with Washington on a big, bold agenda.
And they know a guy in the White House Chief of Staff,
right,
incoming White House Chief of Staff, Ryan Priebus, who's the former chair of Wisconsin's Republican Party, and then, you know, currently RNC chair. So they have, if there was ever an opportunity for them to kind of cross off that wish list of stuff that they want from Washington to come to the states, this is it. And one of the things that they've talked about, and Laurel has covered this some too, it's not crazy exciting, but block grant Medicaid is something that they always talk about. Yeah, I know. Everybody sit down. But essentially, that's just one example of many where the governor wants states to have more power in how they determine, how they decide to spend federal money. So block grant Medicaid would be the federal government says, states, here's the money, you decide what to do with it when it comes to health care programs for the poor, elderly, and disabled.
You know, I know that the governor also wrote to President-elect Trump a letter saying, hey, President-elect Trump, give states more authority in a couple of different areas, including what he wants to do in Wisconsin is to drug test public benefits recipients. Laurel, can you address that? Is that something, do we know if President-elect Trump would go along with this?
We don't know. We haven't heard what the president-elect's response was to that letter that the governor sent just a couple weeks ago. He outlined sort of a wish list of things that he wanted from the federal government, that drug testing being near the top of the list. Of course, that was something that Wisconsin had approved, I think, in 2015, and then had been subsequently blocked by the federal government. The federal government said it's in violation of a federal law. So he wants that block lifted. The governor also, kind of controversially, there was some coverage of this, said that he wanted states to have some more power to limit the number of refugees they accept from specific countries that have ties to terrorism. And he also wanted to lift the ban on gray wolf hunting. So the governor has some clear ideas about what he wants from collaboration with the Trump administration. We don't know what the Trump administration thinks about those things yet, though.
We have Rich on Facebook who says, Wisconsin's biggest political news story of 2016 was Scott Walker's run for the White House. Walker thought he was ready. Voters apparently felt very much he was not. But when did he drop out?
I'm just going to say that was 2015. I agree. And if you go back and listen to something we did a year ago, I would say that that was the biggest story by far of 2015 in my mind. But yeah, it's been a while now. I mean, he was in and out of the presidential race pretty quickly. He got in the summer of 2015 and was out, officially out, a little more than 2 months later.
Yeah. You know, and we'll talk a little bit more about what's on the agenda for, you know, the state capitol coming up. But the governor also is saying that he will make a decision on whether he will run again for governor after the state budget, Sean or Laurel?
That's what he's been saying. Every indication that he seems to be giving, I mean, is that he's going to run. It doesn't sound like he's on the fence at this point, and that waiting until after the budget just, it feels like a formality. He could surprise us and say, you know what, I think I'm going to give someone else a shot, but he keeps hinting pretty strongly that he wants to run for this third term. And he's, you know, just kind of speaking to that campaign debt that he has in his federal account. That is slowly, I wouldn't even say slowly. I mean, it looks like he's closing in on paying that off. The last time that he filed something with the FEC, he had $140,000 in debt remaining, and that's down from $1 million. So he's, you know, that is not somebody who's gives the appearance that they want to just sail off into the sunset in the world of politics. He's actively working, actively fundraising. And every time he talks about the governor's race, it sounds like he's a candidate.
Let's go to Mac in Sand Creek now. Hi, Mac.
Hi. I just want to make a comment. I think the biggest story is just the widening and deepening of the Republican bench. For governor, they have their handpick of anyone they want to choose. They got Sean Duffy or Romaine Flint. If Scott Walker doesn't want to run, and with the larger majorities in the state government, they are just, so Democrats don't really have a future at all in Wisconsin right now. They had hardly anyone to pick for governor, and I just think right now Wisconsin is going to be Republican. It's going to be Republican for a long time just because of the big majorities they have in state government and all the candidates with experience now.
You've given us a lot to talk about, Max, so thank you. Well, there are... Again, we just said that Governor Walker is contemplating and will decide or announce his decision after the state budget. People widely believe he will run again, but there's been talk about how Assembly Speaker Robin Voss might be interested, at least in the future, maybe not this time around, but in the future. Any other candidates on the Republican bench right now?
Yeah, I'm not sure that he wants to be governor.
He said he didn't really want to be.
Yeah, yeah. And I know people say that, and then they say, well, you know, people have been talking to me and had an outpouring of support. But he sounds at least kind of firm on that. One Republican that I think, if it weren't Scott Walker, I think Rebecca Clayfish, the lieutenant governor, would be a candidate. She has, you know, a sizable state campaign fund for lieutenant governor, especially.
Interesting that our caller brought up Romaine Quinn. He's a newly elected, very young state legislator, right?
Yeah, I wonder if our caller is just a big fan of Romaine Quinn. I don't think he's, I mean, no offense, but I don't hear his name on the you know, short list of people who would step in for the governor.
Yeah.
You know, if he were to step out of the way.
How about, Laurel, the Democratic bench? Max seems to think there's no one on it.
Well, there has been some speculation about who would go up against Scott Walker. We did have a high-profile person knocked off that list recently, Senate Minority Leader Jennifer Schilling from La Crosse has been talked about as a potential gubernatorial candidate for the Democrats, and she said that she is not interested in running in 2018. So that's a narrowing of the list that we do have.
Yeah, and she also was she ran for re-election in November and barely beat the former state senator Dan Kopanky, and there was a recount there, and she won by a handful, right?
That's right. I think it was 64 votes, a small margin. And so I think that when I did a year-end interview with her, I asked her if that that recount and that close race would make it a little bit more difficult for her to run for governor, and she sort of hedged on that answer, but then about a week later said that she wasn't interested in running. So,
yeah. Is there anybody that says they want to run?
I mean, we have a few. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a large list of people who are sort of talked about as running, but you actually have a few people who have said pretty directly, I want to run, or have gone pretty close to that line. Former State Senator Tim Cullen, who's a former minority leader former majority leader of the state Senate back in the 80s, went to work in the Thompson administration, then the insurance industry, and then back to the Senate. He said that he wants to run. Kathleen Vinehout, state senator from Alma, has not made such an official declaration, but she's been pretty public in her interest. She ran in the recall election. Mm-hmm. And then you have Dana Walks is a state assemblyman from Eau Claire who has given very strong hints that he wants to run. You know, any three of them are going to have name recognition issues, but I just think given the state of things in Wisconsin politics among Democrats, I think a lot of them are going to say, hey, if I want to run, why not? You know, look around. The party chosen candidates haven't gotten it done. I think you might see a pretty big primary.
Max said that Republicans rule and Democrats are going to be on the outside looking in for a very long time. With the partisan opinion aside, right now Republicans do rule and they have redistricted, and that usually means they will rule for some time to come. However, talk a little bit about the legal challenges to Wisconsin's legislative and congressional maps, Sean.
Yeah, I mean, I would say as far as whether they rule for you know, for years to come, you got a couple wild cards. One, we don't know what 2018 is going to look like. You know, whatever you think of him, Donald Trump is a controversial figure, and he's going to be our president, and we don't know what that's going to look like in 2 years, how people are going to view that, and how that's going to affect races in Wisconsin and elsewhere. And then you have the redistricting challenge. Wisconsin's assembly districts were thrown out in a federal court recently. They ruled them unconstitutional in a case of partisan gerrymandering. It's the first ruling of its kind in the country, and that's going to be appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. So they're going to have the final say on that. But it's a historic ruling, and essentially what it could mean is that either the court or the legislature could have to go back and redraw those districts so that they're more competitive, and Democrats would have a better shot of winning. Not that they'd have a chance of winning back the legislature necessarily, but it could make it much more favorable for them if that happens.
You know, we have just a minute before news. We should talk a little bit about this, the voter ID ruling that reinstated early voting in Wisconsin. Is that going to stay with us?
I'll defer to Laurel White, who spent I don't know how many hours in
a
federal courthouse on that one.
Yeah, I don't believe that there is an appeal for that. So we don't know. But those early voting hours were in place for the November election, and quite a lot of people used them.
Yeah. A minute for either of you to talk about the Supreme Court refusing to take up the John Doe case.
Yeah, I would say that's the end of the road for John Doe, but not necessarily, because it sounds like we may have an investigation into who leaked a number of John Doe documents to The Guardian, you know, the news organization who turned around and then published all those documents that gave a lot of insight into the cozy relationship between Governor Scott Walker's campaign, Governor Scott Walker personally, and a number of these conservative groups who were active in the recalls, who can raise unlimited funds and, you know, until this case, really keep their donors secret.
We are talking with Sean Johnson and Laurel White during this State Capitol Report, where we are reviewing the top stories in state government in the past year. And when we come back, we will talk more about what we can expect in 2017, mostly budget related. And we will wonder what you think. We'll wonder what you want to see happen or not happen in 2017. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine. We have our State Capitol reporters with us during this State Capitol Report. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol Bureau Chief, and Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol Reporter. And we have been reviewing the top stories in state politics and state government in 2016. Now we'll take a look ahead and try to figure out what's going to happen in 2017. And we wonder what you want to see happen in 2017 or what you don't want to see happen in 2017. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So we talked a little bit about that after the state budget is taken care of, that Governor Walker will decide whether he's going to run for a third term. Let's talk a little bit about this whole the budget. Sean, this is typically unveiled by the governor in February?
Yeah, he's. I think that there's not a firm date set yet, but he'll unveil his budget in February. And that is what the legislature is going to do this year, basically. I mean, he sets the table with his budget, and then they spend the next several months putting their own touches on it. That could be, you know, you could see a more active legislature in that regard this time, especially when it comes to areas like transportation funding, where they very openly disagree with the governor, or at least some Republicans do.
All right, so Laurel, we also saw just last week, I think, the resignation of the Department of Transportation Secretary Mark Gottlieb. Why did he resign?
He didn't say exactly why he resigned. Kind of a interesting move, though, as we are ramping up into this very controversial debate over the transportation budget. I think it's widely agreed that the transportation budget is going to be kind of the marquee throwdown in the state legislature during this session. There's, according to projections, a nearly $1 billion budget gap there. So there's a lot of disagreement about how to close that gap. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss doesn't agree necessarily with the governor. The governor has said he doesn't want to raise taxes unless there are corresponding cuts. So the resignation of the transportation secretary as we move into that kind of only heightens, I think, the drama of it all.
Who's the new DOT secretary, and does he agree with the governor when it comes to funding the transportation department?
The new DOT secretary is Dave Ross, who is the, well, he's going to be the secretary. He's currently the secretary of the Department of DSPS. Professional Safety Services.
That sounds right. We'll look it up.
I need to have that printed on a note card when I come on to talk about that. But
he was a former mayor of Superior.
Yeah. And I'm going to guess that he agrees with the governor on this transportation budget. And there was just always some question about whether Mark Gottlieb did, because his record as a transportation secretary a few years ago is somebody who was calling for new forms of revenue, taxes or fees, to pay for roads. And prior to that, as a member of the legislature, he showed a similar openness to finding long-term transportation funding mechanisms, taxes, fees, because right now, in Gottlieb's own words from the hearing that they had a few weeks ago, where he was grilled by Assembly Republican lawmakers, he said that if this budget trend continues, that is, if we basically replicate this budget over the next 10 years, the number of roads, Wisconsin roads in poor condition, is going to double.
Yeah, that's going to be a big area of debate and focus. But there are other agencies, including the education, the UW system, and public education. Any indication, Laurel, what at least is being thought about when it comes to funding those agencies?
Mm-hmm. So the governor has said that there won't be a cut to the UW system. And he's also talked about tying the UW system budget to different performance metrics, which is a new thing. He's outlined some of those metrics, things like graduation rates in specific fields that have been identified as high needs fields in Wisconsin where there's high demand, and how many students graduate on time from UW system schools. So that'll be kind of a new element to negotiations in the UW system budget that we'll see those metrics identified, what people like about them, what people don't.
Is there any more talk about whether or not the UW system is facing a funding cut, or at least not a funding increase, if it doesn't drop a controversial class called the problem of whiteness, which a couple of GOP lawmakers are taking issue with?
I know that that has been that controversy about that class has sort of bubbled up in the past month or so. It seems like it's a few lawmakers that have voiced concern about that. The governor said when he weighed in on that, you know, we're looking at the system as a whole. We might sort of, I think his exact phrase was, we might roll our eyes at a particular class. And he said that he encourages his sons to be critical thinkers about things like that. But he's not concerned about a specific course. He's more looking at the UW system as a whole. So I think that the governor's word on that probably means that that controversy is going to fade into the rearview mirror.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about the drug testing of welfare recipients is something that the governor wants a federal block to that lifted. But is that something that is likely to even be expanded upon? No, I thought that there was some talk about expanding upon that.
I'm not sure about that, honestly.
All right. What about the Department of Natural Resources? That's in the news a lot these days. Is it going to be reorganized?
It's been constantly reorganized under the governor. In the last budget, for example, you saw a number of DNR scientist positions that were eliminated. DNR in the news recently for taking references to climate change off of its website. So, I mean, it's definitely a pro-business mentality running the DNR right now. And so I think to say that we know exactly what that's going to look like come budget time, I'm going to guess we'll be surprised. The other thing that was added to the budget last time with the DNR, a notable change in the budget last time around, was that state tax funding essentially state public funding of the public state parks was gone. So that's a pretty sizable change. And
there were some stories in the news just recently that the park fees may go up. And there was even some talk about the possibility of corporate naming rights, not of the parks themselves, but facilities inside the parks.
Yeah, that remains a possibility.
Yeah. Any other budget-related issues that we haven't talked about that you're keeping an eye on, Sean or Laurel?
I mean, public schools is, I think, the other big question that's been an issue where, despite Act 10 and the ability now for schools to save money, balance their budget by reducing labor costs, there are a number of schools in rural school districts particularly who are feeling the pinch. And there are legislators, including Republicans, who represent those districts who feel like we need to do more for these schools. We'll see what that means in the coming session, you know, what more means. And, you know, you've had this situation over the last few budgets where public schools have said, you know, we're approaching a tipping point. And I don't know that has been reached yet, or what message they bring to lawmakers that makes them think differently about the issue than they have in past budgets.
We're talking about the budget. Before the governor gives his budget address, he's going to give his State of the State address, which is, I believe, slated for
January 10th.
January 10th, okay. Mm-hmm. I know that almost every governor says the State of the State is great or pretty good. Is that what we expect from Governor Walker?
I'm going to guess he's going to probably be a relatively short address, and he's going to save a lot of the big stuff for his budget address. If I had to guess, I think he'll probably talk about the low unemployment rate here and kind of give hints about some of the themes he wants to, you know, pursue as this term continues. I think some of the stuff we've talked about with returning power to the states, for example, he'll probably highlight. And then, you know, drug testing, some of those issues that he feels like are political winners will be highlighted in that speech, if I had to guess.
Yeah. Anything else, Laurel, in terms of the state of the state? Or one thing we didn't talk about is, besides budget-related news, is there any other legislation that's, I guess, simmering on the back burner?
Well, we do have a handful of kind of controversial bills that have been teased in the months leading up to the legislative session. These are either bills that failed in the last legislative session or new ones that have sprung up in the interim. A couple of the ones that have gotten some coverage and some interest already are bills that involve concealed carry in certain locations. So there's a bill from Representative Jesse Kramer that would allow concealed carry in buildings on college campuses. Of course, concealed carry is already allowed on the campus in general, but this bill would allow it in buildings. So he has essentially said that, you know, guns are prohibited on college campuses in effect because they're not allowed in the buildings. Who's going to bring their concealed weapon if they can't take it into the classroom? He's also introducing a bill that would allow concealed carry on private school campuses. So we have that bill. He's also weighing a potential bill that would change the transgender bathroom use laws in Wisconsin. So we've got quite a few coming up that are interesting.
Well, it looks like it's going to be a busy year.
I think so.
All right. Thanks to you both. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol Bureau Chief, and Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol Reporter. Thanks to Bill Mertens and to Breanne Chasso for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. We are going to talk with Mike Crane, the director of Wisconsin Public Radio, coming up after the news. This is the Ideas Network.